It's here! And what a week it has been. The Pope has finally gone, I think. The next visitor is supposed to be a guy named Joaquin. And if the blood moon eclipse did one thing here in Western PA, it brought us early frigid temperatures. I don't mean crisp fall beauty, but freaking cold weather already. Hello, and from StonyRichards.com and soon on iTunes, it's the Stony Richards Live from the Center podcast. So let's get to it, shall we? And so it is time once again for our weekly letter from home, a regular feature of the Stony Richards Live from the Center podcast. Because, as we always like to say, no matter how far away you roam, there's simply no place like home. Well, the blood moon and an eclipse seemed to be a fitting finale to this past summer as we all strained against the cover of clouds to see what we were missing. And unfortunately, we missed it. Oh, some folks on Mount Washington got a glimpse, but we never really saw the whole drama, did we? Speaking of drama, we had enough drama for one day as our world came crashing to an end on Sunday as Big Ben's leg bent in that weird fashion that always elicits the calls of MCL, MCL. No, not Roman numerals, but those little rubber bands that keep our knees working. Well, you know the story. And drama, take two. The Pirates' quest for October and beyond has shaken us to our very core. The only bright spot for the week was Johnstown being remembered not for the flood so much as being honored as Hockeyville with a Penguins win and a post-game showing of Slapshot. Enough already. I mean, did I say flood? Darn near. This past week saw record amounts of rain hit the area, causing traffic to slow for no real reason, and then, of course, for water to puddle where it usually does. As the rain fell on Tuesday and I ran at marathon speed through the parking lot of my Whole Foods store, I had trouble catching my breath as my checkout clerk said, "Well, at least it isn't snow." I shuddered to think and stepped away from my frozen, though not overfished, shrimp, trying to keep a safe distance between anything with frost on it and my skin. As I got home, rain still sheeting down on the back deck, I gazed out the window and down to my woodpile and realized that some of those cut stumps from the summer needed to be split for firewood. For a brief moment, I thought, in a welcoming way, of sweet-smelling fireplace fires and French onion soup with cheese on top and beef stews. And as I tried to get away from thoughts of fall and winter, I opened my iTunes, hit shuffle, and hoped the tunes would just take me away from all this until I realized the first selection that came up was Vivaldi's Four Seasons, and the seasonal movement was L'Autunno, fall. Try as I will, the leaves are falling, the pools are closing, and soon it will be time to start up my snowblower to make sure it's working in order. May God have mercy on our souls. And this, I swear, come the first flakes of snow, I am on my cross-country skis, but this season headed south, unless that too gets washed away. I'm Stoney Richards, and that's this week's Letter from Home. And fittingly enough, from the Associated Press, this story from England and Wales, London. Smokers who light up in vehicles with children inside will face fines in England and Wales as anti-smoking measures are expanded to protect young people from the dangers of secondhand smoke. The ban went into effect Thursday, but police are not expected to issue a rash of fines as the public becomes accustomed to the regulation. It's also hard to look into the car, you know, as you go by. National Police Chiefs Council said in a statement that police would take an educational, advisory, and non-confrontational approach for at least the first 3 months of the ban. This would see people being given warnings rather than being issued with fines, police said. Smoking advocates call the new law unenforceable, but health officials and anti-smoking groups hail the measure as the most important since a general ban on smoking in workplaces and enclosed public spaces took effect in England in 2007. Penny Woods, chief of the British Lung Foundation, said the law brings England and Wales into line with other countries that have taken similar measures. Today is truly a cause for celebration for all those who care about protecting the health of generations to come, she said. The ban means anyone who smokes inside a car with children under 18 will face a £50 fine. That's about $75, unless those rates change. Drivers face the same penalty even if they're not smoking. Well, then you wouldn't be a driver. The law applies even if vehicle windows or a sunroof are open. In other words, on the cancer sticks. It does not apply to a convertible. Well, there it is. If the top is down and properly stowed, and use of electronic cigarettes is not affected by the legislation. It's a start, ladies and gentlemen. The ban has not been introduced in Scotland or Northern Ireland yet. Exciting episode of The Clintdashians. In today's episode, Hillary notices an unfamiliar object in their driveway.
Bill, you'd better come here. I think I need your help.
What is it, honey? Having trouble with that darn old email again?
No, look, the driveway. Do we own a 1977 blue Ford Pinto?
Well, no, man. I mean, I still have the old Mustang, but...
Oh, sorry to barge in like this, Bill Hillary, but I was in the area and I ran out of gas, so...
Why, Bernie? Bernie Sanders, what are you doing here, pal? Hillary, you know Senator Sanders.
I know exactly who he is. Hi, Bernie.
How are you? I had no idea pushing that car around a circular driveway would be such a tough job.
It'll be tougher trying to beat me in the primary.
Hillary, you just got to be hospitable here. I mean, Bernie's a guest. That is a pretty old car you got there, isn't it, Bern?
Yeah, I know. My bike has a flat tire, and it's getting fixed.
Speaking of flat, $25 million seems like a pretty high figure for a socialist to be hauling around.
Hillary, my goodness. Bernie's a guest here. Bernie, can I get you a cup of coffee?
Only if it's that Green Mountain Keurig stuff. You know, that's from my neck of the woods, Bill.
You know, Bernie, I was thinking, you know, it would be very progressive of you to, you know, since we're all in this race together, so to speak... If you were to share some of those incredible campaign funds you've raised with the, collective. You know what I mean?
Coffee's ready, Bernie. How do you like it?
Strong, like my poll numbers.
Well, 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 would you look at that. Now, who would have called the Secret Service to have that blue Ford Pinto of yours towed, Bernie? What a shame.
Well, what a shame indeed. But for who? And how do you think Bernie Sanders likes his coffee anyway? Find out in our next exciting episode of The Klimtashians.
The Bernie's making headlines, maybe telling white lies. They want to run the nation, the Klimtashians.
Well, it is time once again for the evening sports dish, so let's get right to it, shall we, ladies and gentlemen? And if this were really a dish, I think I might ask that there be no seconds for me. A very frustrating week for sports fans in the Berg. It started with promise, it ended, well, less so. And it all started early on in the St. Louis game, as you could hear a collective sigh which soon gave way to moaning, wheezing, and actual tears, not from Big Ben, but from the black and gold faithful, as the man chosen to lead the Steelers to the Super Bowl, whether they have the qualifications or not, went down in a heap. And then, of course, those words we all hate to hear, they're calling for the cart. Big Ben out with a bruised and beaten MCL, backup Michael Vick finishing up the game, and they did squeak it out with no turnovers and the win. What followed was the more painful, hey, we're going to do this attitude of Thursday night's game against the Ravens that turned into, I don't believe it, which was soon followed by calls for the replacement of our hapless kicker, Josh Scobie. And it's not so much what Scobie did, it's what Scobie didn't do. Sorry, I couldn't help that. We Steeler fans seem to think that the Steeler organization has players on hold that can be called up at any time to bring our Super Bowl dreams. And my friends, that's the only dreams we have. To fruition. No. It's going to be a long weekend and a quiet week for Scobie as he tries to work off two missed fourth quarter field goals that gave the Ravens, who really should have lost, a 23-20 overtime victory. A loss is a loss, but a loss to the Ravens, well, let me put it to you this way. You can dress up as Josh Scobie for Halloween, and when they ask you what you're portraying, you can say disappointment. Speaking of disappointing, the Pirates had us believing for 9 innings of Game 1 on Wednesday, but by the 4th inning of Game 2, we were just hoping to beat the Cubs in the one-and-done wild-card game next week. And it wasn't that they lost, it was that they were blown out 11-1 that stung like a bruised MCL. Soothsayers have said, soothingly, that maybe that's the letdown you need before you charge through to the victorious end, but I don't find that so soothing, which is why I say it. That's like saying our GIs could have lost the Battle of the Bulge, but don't you worry, we'll get them later on down the road. To add insult to injury, the Penguins lost an exhibition to a score that I stopped counting after the Red Wings got 7 goals, and for all I know, the Wings are still scoring on the Penguins, but don't you worry, we'll get them later on down the road. I'm Stoney Richards, and that's sports from my vantage point. Hi in the booth!
Let's get out there and hit some people!
Let the dancing begin.
Who is sorry now? On Wednesday, the Secret Service was ridiculed once again after word got out that dozens of agents had accessed the personnel file of a certain House Republican, one who happened to chair the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee that was investigating why the agency was so bad at its job. Oh, wait, there's more. Some information that he might find embarrassing needs to get out. Assistant Director Edward Lowry emailed his colleagues on March 31st. A few days later, an article showing that Utah Representative Jason Chaffetz had applied to the Secret Service in 2003 and wasn't accepted. The Secret Service's less than elegant method of revenge was made public in a report released by the Inspector General for the Department of Homeland Security. Around 45 Secret Service agents peeked at Chaffetz's personnel file, which is private and not supposed to be accessed for revenge purposes. Well, that's good. The anger-fueled research began 18 minutes. What is it about 18 minutes in the government after the start of a March 24th committee hearing in which Chaffetz repeatedly raised his voice, at one point saying, "We're not playing games. This is the life and security of the President of the United States." It wasn't just one department accessing the files either, according to the Washington Post. The president's guards were looking at the old application, as were people in senior management. Press people saw the file. Secret Service officials in Texas and California looked at Chaffetz's documents. Of the nearly 60 times the documents were accessed, according to the DHS report, agents had a valid reason for only four. They were mad and in the process managed to make sure that everyone would be talking about a new Secret Service mess once everyone forgot about the ones that had left them embarrassed and angry in the first place. The DHS Inspector General wasn't quite sure who was responsible for leaking the information. Lowry, the email sender, told investigators he didn't do it, that he said, "I didn't do it," and that he sent the mail out of stress and anger. "I didn't do it." "Certain lines should never be crossed," Chaffetz said in a statement. "The unauthorized access and distribution of my personal information crossed that line. It was a tactic designed to intimidate and embarrass me, and frankly, it is intimidating. It's scary to think about all the possible dangers in having your personal information exposed." Representative Elijah Cummings, the ranking Democrat on the Oversight Committee, who often disagrees with Chaffetz on many issues, said in a statement, "I believe in fundamental fairness, and those who are unwilling or unable to meet the highest of ethical standards should not be a part of the Secret Service." Secret Service Director Joseph Clancy, who has become an expert in saying sorry, apologized, quote, "on behalf of the men and women of the United States Secret Service," he said in a statement, "I again apologize to Representative Chaffetz for this wholly avoidable and embarrassing misconduct." The apology has now been added to the increasingly diverse and voluminous Google exhibition of Secret Service apologies from the past year.
Let the dancing begin.
A new addition to the Stoney Richards Live from the Center podcast entitled "You Said What?"
You said what?
You said what? What did I say? Now. You said what?
Hey. Well, and in answer to the musical question, here is what he said. This from Washington, CNN, and everybody has reported on this, obviously. House Republicans on Wednesday of this past week sharply repudiated Representative Kevin McCarthy's comments that suggested the Benghazi Oversight Committee had succeeded by tarnishing Hillary Clinton, saying it undermined their party's messaging on a key issue and raised questions about his ability to be the GOP's top communicator. The California Republican, who is the leading contender to become the next Speaker of the House, said Tuesday night that the GOP-led Congress had succeeded by bringing down Clinton's poll numbers because of the long-running investigation into the 2012 terror attack that killed four Americans. "Everybody thought Hillary Clinton was unbeatable, right?" McCarthy said on Fox News. "But we put together a Benghazi special committee, a select committee. What are her numbers today? Her numbers are dropping. Why? Because she's untrustable. But no one would have known any of that had happened had we not fought." Speaking to CNN's Wolf Blitzer on the Situation Room, Representative Jason Chaffetz of Utah said McCarthy should apologize, saying the California Republican made an absolutely inappropriate statement. Speaker John Boehner, who is set to retire at the end of the month, sought to provide cover for McCarthy on Thursday in a statement he denied that the committee has anything to do with politics. All tears aside. This investigation has never been about former Secretary of State Clinton and never will be, Boehner said. Privately, Republicans were outraged by the remarks, saying the House Majority Leader had given Democrats unfounded ammunition to argue that the committee's investigation is squarely being driven by politics. Republicans on the committee had tried for months to keep the focus of the inquiry on the administration's handling of the attacks, avoiding getting into the ins and outs of the various aspects on the email stories. But in one fell swoop, McCarthy undercut their strategy. I might have said it differently, Representative Daryl Issa of California told CNN. Any ancillary political activity that comes out of it is, in fact, not the goal of the committee and is not what the committee is seeking to do. Added Representative Justin Amash of Michigan, I totally disagree with those comments. Asked if they could jeopardize his bid for speaker, the conservative Amash said, I think it should be a concern. McCarthy's comments come at a pivotal moment for the 50-year-old Republican. He's now the leading candidate to replace Boehner during next week's leadership elections, giving him a major platform to drive a national conversation and shape the agenda for the GOP. And McCarthy's Benghazi comments could reinforce the impression among some of his critics that his gaffe-prone nature could hurt the party headed into 2016. Representative Chris Stewart, a supporter of McCarthy's who did not see the leader's remarks, said that the California Republican may need to be cognizant that his comments now are going to be heavily scrutinized. I like that. Being a majority leader is different than being the speaker, Stewart said. There's a bigger microscope. You're going to need a bigger microscope. I don't think it's the goal of the conference to hurt Hillary Clinton. I don't think I have ever heard a single time Hillary Clinton's name mentioned in conference. In a statement, McCarthy's office said the investigation has been aimed squarely at learning, say it with me, the facts. And now, my friends, we come to the point of the Stoney Richards Live from the Center podcast that we call the martini, the last shot of the show, and it's this. High-resolution scans suggest the tomb of ancient Egypt's boy king Tutankhamun contains passages to two hidden chambers, including what one British archaeologist believes is the last resting place of Queen Nefertiti. This from Reuters. If proven, the discovery would be the most significant this century and shed light on what remains a mysterious period of Egyptian history despite frenzied international interest. Nefertiti, whose chiseled cheekbones and regal beauty were immortalized in a 3,300-year-old bust now in a Berlin museum, died in the 14th century B.C. British Egyptologist Nicholas Reeves told a news conference in Cairo on Thursday he believes Tutankhamun's mausoleum was originally occupied by Nefertiti, thought by experts to have been his stepmother, and that she has lain undisturbed behind what he believes is a partition wall for over 3,000 years. If it's true, we are facing a discovery that would overshadow the discovery of Tutankhamun himself, Egyptian Antiquities Minister Mamdou Al-Damati told reporters. This would be the most important discovery of the 21st century. Reeves said radar and thermal imaging could help establish whether secret rooms were indeed hidden behind Tut's burial chamber and what they might hold. Damati said the next step would be to carry out radar studies at the site, which could begin in the next 1 to 3 months. King Tut, as he is affectionately known, died around 1323 B.C. His intact tomb, complete with his famous golden burial mask, was discovered in the Valley of the Kings in 1922 by another British Egyptologist, Howard Carter. Experts have long sought to understand why Tut's tomb was smaller than that of other pharaohs and why its shape was more in keeping with that of the Egyptian queens of the time. He sublet it. Maybe it was an Egyptian Airbnb. We don't know. Egyptologists remain uncertain over whether Nefertiti died and was buried. She was long believed to have passed away during her husband's reign, suggesting she could be buried in Amama, where her bust was found in 1912. More recently, most experts, including Reeves, have come to believe she outlived Akhenaten, but changed her name and may have briefly ruled Egypt. The future holds the answer, my friends.
And so comes to an end another episode of the Stoney Richards Live from the Center podcast. Thank you for being with us. Our extreme thanks to musical director Johnny Grieco and, of course, our webmaster, Jeff Orovitz. We will have more in our next podcast. It's the Stoney Richards Live from the Center podcast, heard exclusively on StoneyRichards.com.